So, hello, my name is Lloyd. I'm from Cardiff University and I'm co-supervised at the University of Bristol. My research focuses on the history of domesticated animals in India. The wandering herds of sacred cows and bulls, celebrated as religious idols, labourers and providers of resources such as dairy and dung. The overall goal of my PhD project is to explore how the unique social-religious status of cattle impacted the nature of domestication in the early 20th century. For today's paper, I will talk about an important component of my research, being the relationship between working animals, breeding, and national development. To begin, I will explore how working animals were discussed by developmental discourses in the 20th century, looking at the relationship between the role of the labourer and the creation of a breed. To close, I will look at the practical limitations of the colonial government's efforts to breed a new and improved generation of working animals. By studying the efforts of the Civil Veterinary Department in the Punjab to populate North India with a superior breed of working cattle, known as the Haryana bullocks. The breed is a term used to describe the impact of natural and artificial forces of selection on animal populations. On the one hand, it is the product of evolutionary forces, wherein to survive, each species gradually adapts to the demands of specific environmental and ecological pressures. The breed is also a physical and symbolic manifestation of an engineer's design, the animal's body a biocultural emblem of contextually situated animal husbandry practices and ideas of functionality and aesthetic. To create a breed, animal breeders commonly control the mating, feeding and herding of their animals, using selective reproduction to induce preferred qualities in the next generation. As we can see in this wonderfully detailed diagram, from an animal husbandry guidebook, by the 1940s, animal breeders in India scrutinised every aspect of an animal's body. For the farmers to purchase or breed the best working cattle, they needed to look for and encourage what the book refers to as the characteristics of an exceptional bull, which included muscular shoulders, a well-developed hump, and strong hooves. As numerous scholars have shown, in the colonial context, the breed was considered a marker of the unique conditions and consequences of natural selection in a locality, and the capacity for Western civilization to prevent ecological, cultural, and racial degeneration in the tropics. By the late 19th century, improving India's breeds of dairy cattle became a national goal for the British Raj and Indian nationalists, who saw a new generation of animals as a step towards more milk to feed and strengthen its growing human population. At the same time, sources indicate that for many, the importance of working animals gradually waned, as machines run on fossil fuels became the caloric energy that powered many aspects of industry and agriculture. By the 1920s, motor tractors were widely used by government institutions and missionary facilities all over India, with brands such as Caterpillar finding popularity among landlords in the large irrigated tracts of the Punjab's canal colonies. For colonial and Indian writers alike, working bullocks became symbols of a traditional past, whether as examples of the slow, stagnant pace of the old world, or emblems of a nostalgic golden age before the drudgery of industrialization. But unlike the industrialized West, machines did not replace working animals in India, as they were not economically or ecologically viable for the large majority of India's small holding farmers. As this cover of Margaret Reed's study of working conditions in India illustrates, machines and animals were two components supporting India's advancement as a nation, animate and inanimate technologies that could be improved to bring a brighter future to South Asia. As this fantastic map shows, colonial India was home to a diverse range of animal breeds, each adapted to the unique climatic and socio-economic demands of its region. Each region was associated with a handful of model breeds known for either their value in working, producing milk, or sometimes both. In today's paper, I focus on the Punjab, which is circled in blue, a region that stretches from the arid deserts along the Rajasthan border in the south to the cold barren ridges of its northern reaches along the fertile canal colonies. The most famous and widespread type of cattle in this region was the Haryana breed, powerful but slow workers reared to cultivate large fields and break tough earth in the central Punjab and around Delhi. Standing at 54 to 60 inches, these animals had thick skins with grey coats, leading to light, elongated faces, framed by pendulous ears, short horns, and a large dewlap. Bred in a landscape described by colonial gazetteers as an inhospitable desert, except in years of good rainfall, the southeastern Punjab lacked moisture and miasma of the irrigated tracts. A dry and healthy climate, where only the very hardy stock capable of enduring great hardship survived. According to that map and other sources, Haryana cattle were considered to be dual-purpose variety. This meant that males were fit and able workers, and the females were productive milkers. In rural policies of the colonial and post-colonial era, which is after 1947, the dual-functional cattle have been considered an integral aspect, asset in the goal of maintaining and improving village life across India. As we can see in this image from the 1950s periodical Krishi aur Pashu Palan, which means agriculture and domesticated animals, an ideal Indian village was built upon the backs of the dual-purpose type. As the image shows, cows provided milk used for Indian-style dairy products such as dahi, which is yogurt, and the long-lasting ghee, which is a form of clarified butter. They also reproduced working animals, generally males of 3 years and older, known as bale, which are bullocks, who were integral to the success of the subcontinent's two main harvests. The Kharif autumn crops, such as rice and millet, sown at the beginning of the monsoon season in June, and rabi winter crops sown in October, such as wheat and barley. Male bullocks were primarily employed in ploughing the fields and powering irrigation systems, slowly rotating Persian wheels to extract water from the fields. In addition, both sexes provided urine used for medicine and dung for fertilizer and cooking fuel. If the majority of villagers could access and breed dual-purpose cattle, many veterinarians, agriculturists, and government officials felt that an improved breed could have the potential to improve all aspects of agrarian life and move rural areas towards self-sustainable and autonomous development. During the 1900s, the vision of using Haryana cattle to improve agrarian society became a serious part of the colonial discourse. While the government offered only a lukewarm response to popular cattle during the 19th century, from 1902, colonial officials in northern India, working for the Civil Veterinary Department, began to see the value of Haryana cattle and took steps to protect the breeding tracts and uplift their populations. These efforts came after a series of devastating famines, droughts and plagues in the late 1890s, which decimated cattle herds. As this diagram shows, the strength of Indian Indian agriculture was deemed to be dependent on a symbiotic balance between cattle, the land and the farmer. As we can see, what is termed there as kams or janvar, which means weak animal, was the result of a weak harvest, of the lack of rains, which would gradually deteriorate the population and the people's access to manure and other resources. The causes of this imbalance were a source of extensive debate. In Laxman Satya's study of cattle in the late 19th century, he highlights that while some colonial officials blamed the failure of monsoonal rains, others believed that colonial irrigation and forestry had destabilized the social and ecological conditions that facilitated self-sustained cattle breeding across India. Another popular perspective was that Muslim butchers, beef-eating British, and low-caste tanners drained India of its bovine wealth. This argument was put forth by cow protectionists, a pan-Indian Hindu movement that re-emerged in the 1870s, calling for cattle to be protected from slaughter. To rescue cattle, nationalist and religious leaders often organised rallies, published literature, and opened goshalas, animal care homes that offered veterinary care and a place for cattle to die of natural causes. By contrast, in 1927, the colonial government's Royal Commission on Agriculture would argue that instability was the direct result of the taboo on slaughter and lax controls over mating and feeding, which meant India was overpopulated with an undefined mass of unproductive bovine that drained resources from working animals. Compounded by the scorching heat and sparse fodders of 2 or 3 months preceding the break of the southwest monsoon, Poor animal husbandry practices were deemed to create a scarcity of good bullocks for agricultural work and low yield in dairy breeds, trapping bovine in a vicious circle of decline. In addition to criticising popular practices, beliefs and the effects of the tropical climate, the Royal Commission felt that the colonial government's own efforts to improve cattle populations had been negligible at best. Over the previous 30 years, the Civil Veterinary Department had worked to improve the region's population. As we can see on this map of the Punjab, its efforts focused on two main locations: the aforementioned arid waste of the southeastern districts, circled in green, and the rugged hills of the north in purple. The CVD sought to protect and improve cattle in these regions, as they were the last remaining traditional homes of breeding in the province. In the southeast, the main basis of the government's operation was the Hisar cattle farm. Sprawling across 40 acres of grazing land known as the Bir, the farm was considered to be the second largest of its kind in Asia during the colonial period. Established in 1813 by Major Livingstone to produce horses, bullocks and camels for the military, the farm was transferred to the Civil Veterinary Department of the Punjab in 1899, a department founded 7 years earlier to assist regional populations with veterinary care and animal husbandry. For Veterinary Superintendent of the Punjab Southern Circle, E.W. Oliver, the main objective of breeding Hisar cattle was to find and select bulls and cows whose character and shape approach most closely to our idea of what should be, using judicious breeding to fix a type or strain that is likely to be permanent. From 1902 to 1912, farm manager Colonial J. Farmer purchased new animals from local herders and applied techniques of selective mating over the herd, castrating bad bulls and separating male calves until they were 3 years old to prevent immature mating. Fed on imported grasses and the fodder found across the dry arid terrain surrounding the farm, Haryana cattle either strengthened or perished while foraging under the Malthusian effects of the climate in the region. From the mid-1900s, the farm annually supplied up to 100 stud bulls to district governments and landlords across the Punjab, receiving praise in regions such as Meru for generating great improvement in the district herds. The breed became internationally recognised, attracting buyers from as far afield as Brazil. Reviewing the quality of the farm and the region's stock in 1927, livestock expert for the Punjab, R. Branford, concluded that while conditions in India are usually such that deterioration appears inevitable, statistics from 1897 to 1927 showed that Haryana-type cattle maintained a similar shape, size and quality over time. But the breed was not universally praised nor desired in the Punjab. In his influential report of 1910, A.M. Stowe concluded that Haryana bulls do not seem to be uniformly appreciated, even in the southeastern district. People dislike the large pendulous ears and excessive weight of working bullocks. Malcolm Lyle Darlin noted that stick or no stick, the Hisar bullock goes slow. Despite its potential to be the best for cart and draft, if it does not get food, it gets thin at once, putting a heavy burden on the farmer to feed and maintain. Haryana bullocks were ill-suited to work in many parts of the province, such as the northern regions, where people preferred the more compact and nimble Downy breed. Moreover, stud bulls were also unfamiliar to local herds and lacked the loyal behaviours of cattle reared locally. Often noted to stray from cows, they were purchased to service and less closely monitored. The viability of using stud bulls to improve the animal workforce across the province was also questioned due to the collective impact of how animals mated. Reporting on his tour in 1895, Imperial chemist J. Walker Leather proclaimed that a Hisar bull had caused a vast improvement in the region. However, as young stock were allowed to roam amongst the herd, Leather felt that regardless of the bull's quality, local cattle will gradually deteriorate due to promiscuous breeding. Assistant Director of Land Records, Syed Mohammed Hadi, argued that government knew people wanted working animals to have straight backs, short tails, big strong quarters, and moderate dewlap. But the stud bull program was ineffective as regional herds of cows had not been specially reared. As the CVD stated in 1905, much difficulty is experienced in fixing a type, as it was almost impossible to describe or lay down correct points of a typical animal of any particular breed, as the so-called breeds seem hopelessly mixed. If animals were allowed to freely choose who to mate, the possibility of knowing the outcome and recording the ancestry of a herd was very limited. Lacking a record of ancestral lineage, it was unclear what characteristics the progeny of a stud bull provided by government would inherit. The crux of the issue was a social-religious custom, where villagers allowed bulls to freely mate with any cow regardless of age, size, shape or strength, and the future ill consequences arising from such practice. During a Hindu funeral ceremony, known as Visarga, Hindu families let loose bulls to honour the passing of a relative. Sanctified by a priest and dedicated to the public, these Brahmini bulls roam from village to village servicing the cows, the traditional means by which many villagers were able to find and access the service of a bull. In 1917, cow protectionist Kamani Kumar Chanda argued that recent government laws declaring the Brahmini bulls were unprotected by property law threatened the foundations of India's animal labour force, as roaming bulls were slaughtered by butchers and tanners, without recourse. This view was supported by Captain Peace, who challenged that Brahmini bulls represented a carelessness in management, and that government should offer stud bulls to priests. He considered it to be a custom which offered the best possible means for villagers to secure a good sire for village cattle, a system that had been subjected to extensive trial over centuries, creating the excellence of indigenous cattle that had only of late deteriorated. At the other end of the spectrum, officials such as agricultural advisor Jay McKenna argued that the Brahmini bull was an unmitigated nuisance and a most serious obstacle to any widespread improvement of Indian cattle. McKenna pinned the problem on the behaviours of the system allowed bulls to display. So as is written there, as a rule, nothing is known of his pedigree, and he wanders aimlessly about the country, sleek, fat and well-favoured, indulging his cardinal desires according to his mood and pleasure. Unless appropriated with a gift, he is truculent and a savage brute, and I should be sorry for any official who is detailed to record his performances if he becomes by law the property and concern of government. So, to briefly conclude, from the evidence I've gathered so far, social customs and animal behaviour became a practical limitation to the government's programme of using stud bulls to improve a regional population. The Haryana breed became stronger and fitter on the Hisar cattle farm. However, the government's goal of using stud bulls to uplift working populations was fraught with issues. On the one hand, Haryana cattle were often unsuited to the material, social and ecological conditions in which animal labour took place. On the other, the evidence seems to suggest that without controlled and selective mating on a regional level, stud bulls could only have a limited and often unpredictable impact on the population. Thank you.